And now, sports and other stuff. The Closers. Join the talk now. 800-229-5378. News Talk 1240 KLIK and News Talk 1400 KFRU.
It's a good gig.
The team that played the hardest did win the game.
Yeah, I think they really punched us in the mouth for the first half. These guys have, you know, been through the trenches. They know what it takes, and you know they continuously make big plays down the stretch for us.
This is very much up in the air even before Heupel's announcement today. Would he be back? Would he not be back?
Just take care of this.
Back in front, he scores. Shen will get the hat trick, and the Blues take the lead.
Like I say, I had no plans on leaving there. I had no plan on ever leaving there.
When you don't play or you don't coach, it's the huddle. You miss the huddle.
I'm 100 in, so I never get stopped.
Face off win by Kopitar, scores! Gabrick has goal number 400.
I'm going to get jello and shake.
Serious injuries occur from time to time, and they're capable of shaking you individually and collectively.
It's not Ben McAdoo's fault that they got 15 injured reserve this year.
These games are going to come down to, you know, the end of the game, last possession.
We're all good football teams, and we're all live right now. We all have an opportunity.
You know, each week's a different challenge.
This has been a tough year. It's not what the Broncos are about. I'm embarrassed about it.
Our minds are on Miami, and that's who we're getting ready for, and that's who we'll get ready to play down there Monday night.
People will look up and they say, wow, how'd they all get on the Lakers?
It's because the Lakers are dumb. KOMU opening montage here. Welcome in hour number two. Chris Trevino from KOMU TV 8. The Josh Heupel will move on to UCF. We'll talk about that here in a little bit. Head coach Konzo Martin. It was a win last night, although it was really hard to tell with the postgame comments of the head coach. Mizzou junior forward Kevin Puryear rolling out some of the cliches. And we'll talk about that as well. Chris Trevino again. Fox Sports, St. Louis, Braden Shen, the hat trick and the win. Jimbo Fisher. Never thought I'd leave Florida State. Okie dokie.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? Herm Edwards, he's going to be fun on the college game. LeVar Ball, he's not going to be any more fun. NBC Today, NBC Sports Net. Gaborik with his 400th career goal. Getting jello in shape. I did not know you can get jello in shape. It just kind of wiggles.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he's talking about his son.
Oh.
Yeah. Mike Tomlin, Archie Manning, Matt Ryan, Jack Del Rio, Bill Belichick, John Elway. Bill Belichick, we're just here to focus on the Miami Dolphins. And LeVar Ball. He has no fallback plan.
Bill Belichick, to me, is like, who is it? Benicio Del Toro in Usual Suspects.
Oh, yeah.
In the lineup scene. Like, in English this time. Like,
as we all don our sleeveless hoodies to get ready for the rest of hour number two, we welcome in Rock'em Nation's Bill Connolly. Do you have your sleeveless hoodie on in honor of Bill Belichick?
I have no sleeveless hoodies. I only have a lot of sleeved hoodies.
Okay. Are they all Pumas?
Of course.
You could give the little one some scissors and you would soon have a Bill Belichick-like wardrobe.
I'm we try not to give her scissors in general, so she still ends up with them all the time.
That seems like a poor security plan going on over at the Connolly household. Bill Connolly, Rock'em Nation, SB Family of Nations. You can follow on Twitter at @SBN_BillC. And, yesterday was starting out fairly nice. A couple of outlets were reporting that, at 11 o'clock, you'll be tuned in. The Knights of UCF will be making their next coaching announcement. And most people in Missouri went, yeah, whatever. And then they went, oh, that announcement. Josh Heupel. Not only how surprising was it to you, Bill, but what does this do for Missouri recruiting-wise and heading into the bowl game since they've lived life in a goldfish bowl the last 7 weeks?
Yeah, I mean, we're kind of waiting to see, I guess, what impact it has specifically, but it's a reminder of how weird the December signing period is, among other things. You've got this this whole period in time where we've got all our normal coaching situations going, our coaching search situations going on, and in like whatever it is, a week and a half or something, we start signing recruits. I think what it affects in that regard is just simply Barry Odom's going to have to make his decision quickly. And, you know, he has a list. I'm going to assume he has a list because anytime you have a successful coordinator, especially a guy like Heupel who has been successful at other places, has plenty of experience, and you knew he would probably want to become a head coach one day, he better have a replacement list in mind. I assume he does, but now he has to act on it pretty quickly to make sure that the recruits are reassured. I know there are quite a few recruits who certainly were drawn to the Josh Heupel specific version of the offense. And we need to kind of move on that pretty quickly, and I'm assuming he will.
With everything out there, I know you did your big 25 list and tried to, you know, kind of get everybody at least a little bit of headline FaceTime across the spectrum. Continuity or you know, something that Barry Odom just wants some guy to put in the wheelbarrow and take control of and not have to think about it. You know, where is this decision headed?
Well, I think, you know, the continuity thing, I think, would certainly be nice, you know, especially when you've got guys like Joe John Finley who came from this type of offense and could, you know, certainly remain an influential part of an offense. You know, we'll see if Barry Odom thinks he's maybe too young. He's, I think, 32, and maybe he ends up on Josh Heupel's staff or something. But the continuity thing is pretty good. I think the most important thing, though, it really just comes down to like finding a good coach, finding a guy you think can run a good offense, and things like continuity, how long he'll stay, things of that nature are all secondary to just making a really good hire. And so, and he's worked with Finley and of course Andy Hill and you know, Glenn Ellerbe, everybody else. Glenn Ellerbe obviously was co-coordinator for a little while at Arkansas State before coming to Columbia. He knows those guys, knows their strengths and weaknesses, knows who can handle it. You know, if he finds, you know, he can go out and search. If he finds somebody better than that, great. But, you know, continuity has benefited schools like Missouri for a while. And you know, maybe it's more important than at a big-time school. So maybe that's the way he goes. I don't know. Like, it's really kind of interesting with an Odom type of coach in that we don't really know a lot about his connections mm-hmm. in general. You know, he's been with Missouri so long. He was with Memphis briefly. But we don't really know who he has a good feel on elsewhere because he hasn't worked in many places.
I'm gonna promote you right now from writer and scribe at SB Nation and Rock M to head coach of Missouri. You slide open that right-hand drawer. What are the top three names that are there for Bill Conley?
Well, I really, especially if you're interested in this kind of offense, I really like Graham Harrell at North Texas. Not only because we all recognize his name from Texas Tech.
Not lovingly, though.
But he is also, you know, obviously with help from his head coach, also mm-hmm. a former offensive coordinator, he's done pretty spectacular things in North Texas in terms of installing an offense that, and basically kind of creating the same sort of resurrection situation that Missouri faced. You know, 2 years ago, North Texas was going 1-11. Then they won 5 games last year. They won 9 this year. And their offense, in my opponent, adjusted rankings are something like 22nd, which in North Texas is pretty stinking good. So I'm really a fan of his, and I think there would be a certain level of continuity and familiarity with a lot of the concepts he would try to introduce. So I would be completely and totally okay with a hire like that. You know, Andy Hill's been around a while, maybe too long, but, you know, because I think we all kind of know his strengths and weaknesses to a degree. I really like Ellerbe and Finley both, and so I would definitely give them a really solid look. You know, Ellerbe with a co-coordinator, maybe figure out a co-coordinator situation there, but I wouldn't mind that move at all. They've especially Ellerbe's probably been the single best assistant coach you hire Odom's made, except for maybe Heupel. So that would be a perfectly sensible situation. And then I like, you know, Sterling Gilbert, the guy who's at USF now, followed Charlie Strong from Texas to USF. I think that would be another situation where you have a decent amount of continuity and a few new ideas, and that would probably produce a pretty good result.
Bill Conley, Rock M Nation, SB Family of Nations with us here on the Closers.
Is there an offensive coordinator in the offing who, for all intents and purposes, keeps Drew Lock, or is it still roll the dice no matter who the hire is?
I don't know what to do exactly about that situation, honestly. I think Locke's situation, you know, he's going to have a very familiar supporting cast if he comes back. He's still going to have most of the same assistants. Maybe there's a way to get him a little bit involved with the interview process, however that takes shape. That takes shape in many different ways. But, you know, I'd hate to think that short term. You know, you start thinking that short term, I need to bring in a coordinator, and one of the big things is going to be, I mean, he's going to keep this quarterback for next year. That makes me a little nervous, like it's a little too short-sighted. So as long as we're not making massive changes to the offense, as long as it's a relatively spread-out system with good tempo, you know, the continuity is going to be relatively decent, and I think that's going to be At that point, at least, the coaching change won't have an impact on Locke's decision. I think what's going to impact Locke's decision is simply where he's projected and where he thinks he could be projected if he comes back another year. Otherwise, it probably doesn't necessarily matter all that much.
Yeah, if you make the hire just to keep Drew Locke happy, you end up like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers or the New York Giants. So there's your NFL parallels about keeping a guy.
Yeah, that's just in general, you don't want to end up like them in just about any sort of context. So,
That's true. Well, the Giants did win 2 Super Bowl rings so recently.
Sure.
You know, anyway. All right, Bill Connolly, Rockham Nation with us here on the Closers. Early signing period for football. You mentioned that to begin with. For just specific for Missouri, does all of this coaching flux now help or hurt, or really no change because it's such a wait and see attitude for recruits with the Tigers?
Yeah, I mean, I think, the Heupel thing kind of muddies up the waters a little bit. Missouri, okay. Obviously, we saw them, if you follow the right people on Twitter, if you subscribe to Power Missouri or wherever else, you started to see them getting in on some kind of Tennessee commits or Florida State commits and all that, and trying to take advantage of being the steady ship at the moment. Obviously, the Heupel thing changes, but at least a little bit. But this is still the way kind of recruiting works. Nobody's official until they're signed, and so you're going to keep trying to figure out who's out there, who's available, who might be willing to listen, and that's clearly what Missouri's doing. But it's going to be the coordinator thing is going to be interesting. It'll be a nice test. Obviously, none of us really know exactly what to expect from the early signing period. Coaches are going to try to sign just about all of their committed players, obviously, and nobody really knows how successful that'll be. How many will hold out for potentially better offers in February? I would assume Missouri still signs most of its currently committed players, and I'm assuming Missouri thinks that too. But we'll see how it works out.
Okay, let's switch over to basketball a little bit here. Bill Connolly, Rockham Nation, with us here on the Closer. You can follow him on Twitter at @SBN_BillC. All right, Missouri picked up win number 7, which is the fastest time they did that since the 2013 season opened up, when they opened up at 10-0. I don't remember, who was the head coach back then? Was some Faith, some guy from Miami who's now at another location, Frank Eighth. Okay, last night, yesterday, yeah, it doesn't really. Yesterday's game, though, had felt so weird. There was no energy in the crowd. There were about 10 or 12,000 people there, and I felt like we were watching a game in a mausoleum where nobody wanted to disturb the person, not just the person next to you, but you didn't want to make sure that you were making too much noise, that the players couldn't hear the coaches yell at them. So why did last night's game, which was a win for Missouri, feel so much like a loss when you took the game visually in?
Now, first of all, the official box score says there were 15,061 in attendance. So maybe you were in the wrong building.
All right, never mind.
Just generally, I mean, I think everybody kind of understands the stretch that Missouri's in right now. Well, number one, there are expectations. So that makes it a little different. Like, when you don't want to just beat the 300 ranked team per Ken Pom by 19 points. You want to, put up some 40-point display of force. But I think everybody kind of also understands that we're in kind of the 4-game just don't screw up mode. Get to Illinois at 10-2. Don't get anybody hurt. Keep shooting pretty well. Just keep running your offense, and then the real games pick up pretty soon again. Because it just kind of feels like, everything you read about the game was just kind of that it wasn't a real game. It wasn't Iowa State. It wasn't like anything like that. It was just a game you're just supposed to win and survive in and then move on. I'll be impressed if anybody remembers a single second of this game a year from now. So Missouri still shot pretty well. The ball handling, the turnovers, and the assists flowed, which is at least if you're going to have one, you have the other. That way you can call it, kind of paint a picture of a high-risk, high-reward kind of system going on. Missouri win challenged in the second half. All of a sudden, they just calmly put the game away, and that was good, too. So, completely forgettable in every way. That's probably not a bad thing. Got another couple of weeks of this, and then you get the real basketball starting again.
Is it good for Coach Martin to have kind of 3 or 4 of these games in a row where you could fall into that trap of the name on the front of the shirt is better than the name on the front of their shirt, so therefore we're going to win, cruise control kind of thing, and he can use it to wake them up? Or is Mizzou going to fall victim to that exact thing at some point in here and stub their toe?
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, for, you know, for in terms of coachable moments, you could even tell in the press conference after the game, Konzo was more than willing to start railing against his team for lack of effort. So you kind of like those games if you're a coach. As long as you still win them comfortably, it's great. But the one thing about this four-game stretch leading to Illinois is every opponent gets a little better. Especially just looking straight at the Pomeroy ranking, Miami's at 306, Green Bay's 279, and North Florida's 270. But then Stephen F. Austin's 153. That's not that far behind Illinois. This is a situation you can probably get by with, in third gear the next two games, but you're going to have to ramp it up against Stephen F. Austin, and that'll kind of hopefully lead right into ramping it up again against Illinois. So, yeah, I mean, Konzo, you want to win every game by 40 points, but I'm pretty sure he was okay with how things played out yesterday because he can run the guys in practice today.
Because everything was a teachable moment. Turnovers have become the thing that, at least when I look at a box score, like football, I look at third down conversions. For basketball, I look at point turnovers and points off. 17 extra possessions because of those turnovers from Miami and 17 points. They're averaging, Bill, 15 turnovers a game. How do you shore something up like that? Because, you run up against teams in the SEC that are athletic, that can pressure the ball handler. You're going to be coughing that up, and that's just more possessions you have to defend.
Yeah, it is funny if you look at the stats right now. They're top 15 in shooting in offense, which is another amazing thing to step back and realize when you're talking about a Missouri team.
Yeah.
They're top 50 in offensive rebounding, about top 50 in how they draw fouls and get to the line and whatnot, and they're barely top 300 in turnover rate. It's clearly the thing. We always talked about it, even with the Anderson days, even when a team's going really well, you kind of know what its fatal flaw is, what it's going to eventually cost it in the NCAA tournament. If this team is good enough to get to the NCAA tournament, we've got a pretty decent impression that ball handling is the thing that's going to bounce it from the NCAA tournament. But, I think it just puts pressure on all the other aspects of the game. So much of college basketball is 3-point shooting. As we saw when they went 2-for-20 and almost lost to Emporia State. Mm-hmm. But it just means, not only do you have to do pretty decent in the rebounding and the shooting and all that, you have to be good in those to overcome just handing possessions away to the other team. You hope that as the season goes on, you've got a junior, and a freshman and a point guard. That means there's still growth potential there. There are ways to, tactically try to avoid certain situations. And so you hope they figure those out and things get better, but it's clear what the primary flaw of this team is, and that's not going to change, I don't think.
When does Konzo Martin or do the players figure out who the heck their point guard is going to be? Because last night it was a 1-to-1 assist-to-turnover ratio.
Yeah, I mean, it was 17 assists, though. So, I mean, there's at least that.
Mm-hmm.
That is a good number of assists, a good percentage of the made baskets. So I do think that is part of the equation here. There is a lot of passing going on. There's a lot of risk being undertaken with this offense. In theory, you start to smooth that out a little bit, get a little more familiar with everybody, especially since you spent the entire offseason preparing for an offense to run around a single, a player and have everything revolve around that. So in theory, if you get a little better at the risk-reward routine, you get more reward out of it and everything ends up reasonably okay. But the point guard situation is probably going to remain like this until somebody seizes it. We've seen some really good games from Geist, and we saw yesterday where yesterday was a very strange game for Jordan Geist. I mean, there were no shots. He rebounds, assists, fouls, and that was it. But Terrence Phillips, looked shaky and played only 7 minutes. Blake Harris played 17 minutes but didn't do a whole heck of a lot and had 4 turnovers. So, I mean, really somebody has to take control of that. It wouldn't do Konzo Martin any good to just say, okay, he's my guy until they prove that he's their guy.
Will this
They're
team?
His guy. I screwed up my pronouns there.
I'm not the language police out here. That is not my job. I know what my job is, and it's to ask this final question. Will the Missouri Tiger basketball team have 10 wins by the time they get to that Illinois game?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Stephen F. Austin is the major danger there. But regardless, I mean, we've seen good, and now we're talking about being disappointed by a 19-point win. I think that says a decent amount right there. This is a team, the odds are very good that they get to St. Louis at 10-2. Odds are pretty good that they leave St. Louis 11-2 and head into that break before conference play. So, things are still shaped up very nicely here. It's just yesterday was more of a water-treading game than any sort of, you know, continued breakthrough. We saw a lot of breakthroughs over the last couple of weeks, so I think we just got a little spoiled.
All right. Well, nobody drowned yesterday. So Bill Connolly, Rock M Nation, SB Family of Nations, thank you for the time, sir. I do appreciate it.
Thank you.
You are very welcome. That's Bill Connolly, Rock M Nation, and we will be right back. We've got more of the closers right after this.
The Closers on News Talk 1240 KLIK and News Talk 1400 KFRU.
And welcome back to The Closers here as hour number two rolls along. We've got some hoops and some Chiefs to talk about in this second half hour of hour number two. 442-8255 is the phone number. Thanks to Bill Connolly for joining us in that first segment. Man, a lot of stuff going on. A lot of little nuances to work through. And then there's some others that are just that the giant 800-pound gorilla laying right there in the room for you.
Mm-hmm.
So let's, shall we deal with the nuance or shall we deal with the 800-pound gorilla?
Oh, gorillas.
All righty. Then let's deal with the gorilla. Kansas City Chiefs, 6-6, tied. Actually, they're listed as tied with the Raiders and with the Chargers in the AFC West. They are ahead of the Chargers but behind the Raiders because they got beat by the Raiders out in Oakland, and they will have that rematch this Saturday. The Kansas City Chiefs, if you missed it in the first hour, have suspended Marcus Peters for one game. That happens to be this coming Sunday, noon kick at Arrowhead. If you had to give me one area to answer this question, what area would it be? What is wrong with the Kansas City Chiefs since they were 5-0?
Everything?
Ah!
Is that a single word?
That's an all-encompassing cop-out.
Oh, man. Boy, that's tough to narrow it down that much. I mean, they definitely haven't gotten on the same page. When one unit is good, most of the rest of the other units are pretty bad, which is never really ideal. If everyone's bad for one game, that's okay. And then everybody's good again, that's fine. But, you know, the play calling has been bad, and Andy Reid benched himself from play calling.
Mm-hmm.
And Alex Smith has not looked great. They've tried to out-trickerate themselves a bunch of times recently in order to jumpstart that offense. The defense they don't really have a killer instinct. They're not getting pressure on the quarter. There's a lot of things wrong, George.
And when you look at it from that point, and that becomes the reality, it becomes that much bigger of an issue to fix it. It looked like last week against the Jets, all right, we fixed the offense. 474 yards, 31 points. All right, the offense is good. And then you look at the scoreboard and realize you just lost 38-31.
Yep.
You gave up 488 yards.
Yep.
Your defense could not stop the New York Jets Jets on a third down. 65% conversion rate on third downs. Now, they had a lot of opportunities, did the Jets.
Mm-hmm.
It was like 13 of 20.
Yeah.
And you couldn't get off the field.
Well, you don't have pressure. You're asking guys in coverage to do a lot more for a lot longer.
But there's a larger problem with this Kansas City Chiefs defense, because I can remember when we started the season with Jay Binkley talking about, all right, strengths and weaknesses, Kansas City Chiefs, go. Well, one of the weaknesses was not good against the run and have a hard time getting past pressure.
Mm-hmm.
Pressure on the quarterback. Okay. The first five games, it seemed like they mitigated that a lot because Kansas City had long, time-consuming drives. So you eliminated some of the exposure for your defense. They weren't out there as often, so the other team doesn't really have time to expose things. They've got to hurry up because they're already in a 10-0 hole or a 17-0 hole.
Mm-hmm.
And now, especially with that Pittsburgh Steeler game, that became the MO of this is how you beat these Chiefs.
That was a blueprint game.
Oh, man. And we talk about blueprint games, and You know what blueprint games are? They're garbage if you don't have the personnel. They don't meet up. They're not worth a bucket of warm spit if you don't have the personnel to be able to execute that. Well, unfortunately for the Chiefs right now, they've run into a series of teams that do have some of that personnel that can cause them problems. Broncos weren't one of them. Okay, but the Cowboys, Ezekiel Elliott's last game, it became a ball control issue. The Cowboys owned the ball, converted a lot of third downs. The Giants, same thing. Kansas City was a little bit complicit in that because there were a couple of points in that game where Kansas City was like, you know, we're tired of this football here. You have it. Travis Kelce, for crying out loud, has an interception now. His QBR is awful. I think they should trade him.
Well, I mean, they should definitely put Mahomes in.
Instead of Kelce. Absolutely. Yeah. The Bills. All the Bills did was play a cover two, drop two guys back in coverage. You had one kind of center fielder, and you had eight in the box. Daring Kansas City to do two things. Beat them with the throw and pass protect. Couldn't do either one of them. And when you got eight guys in the box, if we've seen this, and it doesn't matter what level of football, if I've got eight guys in the box on my defense and you only have five people blocking,
I win.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's a problem.
I don't even have to get the abacus out for that one. I can figure that one out in my head.
Right. And with eight there, now that means instead of being out in the pattern, Travis Kelce's got to stay in and block.
Even if you have to chip him. You've removed his straight line speed that is so good. I mean, when he gets matched up on a linebacker, you straight line that guy right down the field.
Yeah. Or you get, you know, a skinny post and that linebacker is. This is a little bit of like what we saw with Albert Okwuegbunam this year. And I'm feeling very confident with that name now. But you see him, what Missouri did with him, they dragged him across the middle, got him matched up on a linebacker, and it was a mismatch. And he was open. Drew gets him the ball. Same thing Travis Kelce. Same thing Rob Gronkowski. You see that same style. Get him matched up on a linebacker because they're shorter. They're not as fast. And that was what made Travis Kelce really and not only impressive, but effective. They got that against the Jets. They got back to some of that stuff against the New York Jets. But man, just when you thought you got the offense fixed, the defense craters. Points given up in this four-game slide for the Kansas City Chiefs. 28, 12, 16, 38. In all four of those games, it's been a better than 50% third down conversion rate.
Yep.
And I mentioned it with Bill Conley. One of the things I pay attention to on basketball is not just your turnovers, but your points off turnovers. Football, similar turnovers, points off turnovers, but you have the added nugget in there of third down conversion. If I've got a high third down conversion rate, your offense isn't getting back on that field.
Right.
And I am matriculating that ball down the field.
Hank Stram. Knew what he was talking about.
That's right. A little musty, but it still works.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. Peter's out this weekend. Is it a 5-game skid?
Yep.
See, and this is the problem with this Chiefs schedule right now. You ran into kind of that soft portion. You thought, okay, the Steelers game was going to be a typical game between the Chiefs and the Steelers.
So Steelers won.
Yeah, rock 'em, sock 'em, robots.
Steelers won.
They catch you under the chin. Yep. Yeah, so you push the head back down again, you get back there in the ring, and you get a 10-point win against the Broncos at home. It wasn't great, but you got the win.
Right.
Go on the road to the Cowboys. By that time, you're probably thinking, all right, Ezekiel is probably going to eventually get this dumb suspension taken care of. And he probably will, oh, no, he's there. Okay. Loss, 28-17. Giants, they were a train wreck. Their only win that year, so far in that year, had been the Raiders. The Chargers, rather. And they were complicit in that. And it was a field goal kicking contest. The Giants weren't good at anything. And you gave them their second win of the year.
Yep.
Because all you couldn't find the end zone. Bills, we mentioned their defense, what they did to counter what the Chiefs were able to trying to do. But then against the Jets, man, you got the Nagy with the play calling. Offense looked good. But every single wart we'd been worried about all year long with this Kansas City Chiefs defense was exposed.
And now you remove one of your top three best players on the defense?
Now, part of Peter's issue has been a run of mouthiness and malcontent. In fact, one of the reporters today in the presser asked if Andy had kind of just reached the end of the string. And Andy kind of hemmed and hawed and no commented his way through that one. We deal with that man to man, and I don't bring that stuff out in the open. That's what we do. That's how I roll, is what Andy said.
So, yes.
So, yeah. Yeah. Well, he didn't say that specifically. But, man, you're finishing up this season again 6-6 in a division that you once held control over, and you are really at risk of finishing this season 6-10. And neither would surprise me. 10-6, 6-10. I wouldn't be shocked either way.
I'd be pretty shocked at 10-6.
I'd be pleasantly surprised.
I'd be shocked.
All right, maybe I'd lean more towards shocked.
I mean, this is a fish riding a bicycle right now. I mean, this is you have nothing going the way you want it to go.
One of these
fish on a bicycle.
Yep. I mean, it is.
Yeah.
I mean, look. No one on that team looks like they know how to fix it. And I mean that from the GM's desk down. I don't think anybody knows how to fix that right now.
And I will go to a question that when I start seeing a team spiral like this team is, and we've talked about it before with Missouri football or Missouri basketball, even with St. Louis Cardinals baseball, whenever you see a team do this, the first question you have to ask is, do you trust your teammate to do their job? And that's where this team is at right now. On both sides of the football, do you trust your teammate to do their job? Not your job, not somebody else's job. Just do theirs. And I think right now, if this Chiefs defense says, oh yeah, we trust them, they're not being honest with themselves. Because we're watching a team that had high hopes. High in the sky hopes. Super Bowl. Hosting. All of that. And the descent began in the fourth quarter in a win against the Texans. When the Texans got a couple of garbage time passes and for touchdowns from Deshaun Watson. And from that point on, it seemed like the invincibility balloon was popped. The Chiefs won that game by 8 points, 42-34. But it ended up being a lot closer than it should have. Because in that fourth quarter for Kansas City, they got a Butker field goal, or two Butker field goals, and a punt return for a touchdown. Meanwhile, the Texans responded with a touchdown pass from Watson, a touchdown pass from Watson, a touchdown pass from Watson.
How's his season going?
He's watching.
Oh, okay.
Watching and learning. Something about an ACL. But, man, the 800-pound gorilla in the room right now for the Kansas City Chiefs is trust and confidence. Actually, I guess there's two gorillas in the room.
Just a gorilla with multiple personality disorder.
Oh, awesome. Nothing like a silverback that's angry and happy.
Right.
All within a 30-second time frame. Yeah, what? 6-10, Kansas City Chiefs. They will end the season, they'll open the season at 5-0, and they'll close the season on an 8-game slide.
I mean, right now, if you had my checkbook in hand.
Which I do. Over, right here.
Over under 8.5 wins for the Kansas City Chiefs at the end of the season.
Under.
There you go.
Yeah. It's amazing how quickly it all fell apart. And it's not because you had a whole lot of injuries either. I mean, you had some. But, wow. To go fall this far, that fast, has been remarkable.
Well, maybe, sort of. That's one word for it.
Yeah. You have some others?
Yeah.
You want to share them off air?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll do that then.
The Closers. Join the talk now. 800-229-5378. News Talk 1240 KLIK and News Talk 1400 KFRU.
To the Closers here as we wrap up hour number two, the Wednesday edition. Thanks to Gabe DeArmond from PowerMizzou.com for joining us. Also, Tracy Jex, Columbia College Cougars cross country and track and field head coach. Also, toting a couple of trophies from the AMC Championship. And also, Bill Conley from Rock M Nation today. So, appreciate all of their time that they afforded us today. Last night, Missouri Tigers picked up a win. They did so at home. 70-51 over the Red Hawks of Miami of Ohio. Missouri beat them last year as well. Missouri on the whole, will give you the numbers. Shoots 53% for the game. Goes 25-47 overall. 10-23 from beyond the arc. That's a 44% shooting from beyond three. While Miami of Ohio, 32% for the game. 21% from beyond the arc. And 4-8 from the free throw line. The Bunnies for Missouri, that's inside that little smiley face, 12-19, which is not bad. That includes, by the way, through contact, because then you write off the the free throws. So Missouri gaining 28 of the available 38 points. You get bonus points when I count Bunnies if you get the bucket and the free throw that closes things in. Head coach Konzo Martin met the media after the game, and he was asked, the first question was about playing those four consecutive road games, Utah, then the Advocare Invitational, and then playing UCF in Orlando, but then returning home to play, and coach talked about, you know, it's not probably in the future he'd be all right with scheduling it, but not with a young team. But he also had something really interesting to say following all of the explanation about the scheduling and all the rest of that stuff. And here's what the head coach had to say about just returning and playing at home.
You can't allow home to make you lazy. You still have to have the mentality to dominate games. It doesn't matter where you plan, it's how you plan. And I think that's the next step for our guys, because everything is a step. Every game will be something different the next game. Because it's so new, you're talking about guys that have played together. You're talking about guys that are returning probably one or two more wins from all they had last seat. So it just and we have to appreciate and applaud every victory you get, but you can't get consumed with this right here. Because a lot of you get lazy, a lot of you get weak. And you have to understand the task at hand and what's in front of you.
It was a really interesting postgame last night.
Yeah, Coach used the negative stick and carrot after a win.
Yeah.
Now, to be fair, the previous regime didn't have a lot of wins to choose from
to
try and use this tactic.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see if it pays off with a young team and guys who, as he says, you know, haven't really won before very much. So, but it certainly is interesting to take a team kind of to task after a win.
Yeah. And he was not last night afraid of going you and you. Not happy with it. And he said so as much when he was asked about Jordan Barnett and Kevin Puryear from last night. By the way, just let's give you the good news before you hear from the coach. Barnett, 15 points on 5 of 11 in 31 minutes. And Puryear, 20 points, 6 of 8 shooting in 30 minutes, including going 6 of 6 from the free throw stripe. And coach was asked about the importance of those two. And a little bit of sugar and a little bit of salt.
Well, I don't know if it's important as what's expected. I mean, it's not like we're playing, you know, 25 guys. I mean, your role is your role. We need the production. It's the bottom line. We practice. We perform. I didn't think Barnett played a great game. I mean, 15-8, but I didn't think he played very well at all. I really didn't. I thought Kevin did some good things. I thought he could have been more assertive, posting up, attacking the rim. I don't know why he had to. Maybe the guy designed to play for got to post up when that's an advantage. They're just being aggressive. I thought they set the tone. I thought the team that played the hardest didn't win the game.
The end of that, where he says, I thought the team that played the hardest didn't win the game.
Mm-hmm.
That gets back to your point that you made just a little bit ago, and you made it back in hour number one about the name on the front of the jersey.
Doesn't win you any games.
No. Nope. Might as well turn that thing. Once that ball gets tipped, might as well just turn that jersey inside out.
Shirts and skins. Let's go.
Well, that could be a little awkward. No, these guys are all in pretty
good
shape.
Yeah, those guys are all in pretty good shape.
Yeah, they're pretty good shape.
Yeah.
better shape than some of us. But no, it was just, it was an interesting post game, and Gabe brought it up in the first hour of, he's a guy that's not afraid to be brutally honest, because what we've dealt with in the past, Frank Haith always sugarcoated everything. I mean, he was a jellyfish up there.
Well, Frank was selling you a used car.
Oh, yeah.
The used car was Mizzou basketball, but right. He was selling it, yeah.
Which included undercoating.
Kim just was tired.
Yeah.
Of losing.
Yeah.
Of answering questions about losing.
Yep.
Of talking about losing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's
Konzo's, he's right there, man.
Yep. He's got it.
You're not telling you anything you know. I mean,
no.
Yeah. It's, I like it.
I like it too. Jay, thank you, man. Appreciate
it.
Thanks everybody for listening. We will talk to you all tomorrow. And as always, we ask that you please be careful out there.
The Closers on News Talk 1240 KLIK and News Talk 1400 KFRU.